be prepared. If you get a chance, you better be prepared, because you may never get another chance.
Today on the Rising Coaches Podcast, we get the opportunity to speak with the former standout head coach at Kansas State, Coach Bruce Weber. Coach Weber started his coaching career as a GA at Western Kentucky, leading him into assistant role with Purdue, which ultimately helped him start his head coaching career at Southern Illinois, leading into Illinois, and then most recently, Kansas State. Coach Weber has posted a 497 and 302 overall record in his stint as a head coach and winning two championships in the NBC, Big Ten, and Big 12 conferences each, on top of all of his extensive collection of the Coach of the Year awards. Weber is now working with the Big Ten Network as an analyst. Please welcome Coach Bruce Weber. Video analysis is expensive and your budget probably isn't getting much bigger. Fulcrum Tech is here to help. Used by basketball teams at all levels from Division I all the way to high school, their Angles product is very similar to what you know and allows you to code, capture, and analyze with ease. All you have to do is import the raw video in Synergy with just the click of a mouse. Over the past 2 years, over 60% of Division I teams in conferences such as the SEC, Pac-12, American, NBC, and A-10, just to name a few, have made the postseason, all while using Fulcrum Tech and saving thousands and thousands of dollars compared to their old companies. Reach out to Fulcrum Tech on X at Fulcrum Tech or their sales@fulcrumtech.com. Just shoot them over an email and be sure to mention if you are a Rising Coaches member. Do more, spend less with Fulcrum Tech. Welcome, everyone. We're back with another episode of the Rising Coaches Podcast. I'm Doug Caputo alongside Alan Major. And today we have ourselves the former head coach of Southern Illinois, Illinois, and most recently Kansas State, Coach Bruce Weber. Coach Weber, what's going on?
I'm doing fine, thanks. Great to be here, and I always love to talk basketball and also see one of my former assistants, Alan Major, and visit with him.
Oh, good to see you, Coach. Thanks again, man. Thank you for doing this. We've been looking forward to this one. We're excited.
I mean, you have a tremendous background, and one of the things before we even get into the background is I want to go back and start like very beginning of your career. So one of the first things that you did, you initially from Wisconsin, and you leave and are one of the first people in your family to leave Wisconsin, right? First one to get out, and everybody is just, oh, Coach Weber, I should say at the time, it would just be, oh, my son Bruce, oh, you know, the brother, he's moving away. So talk about that first opportunity, you know, for you to move away, to experience and to be able to get your first position at Western Kentucky, and then just kind of how that transpired.
Well, I am first generation. My dad was born in Austria, came over, you know, back World War II was starting to get going, and my grandfather wanted out of there and came over. So, you know, my mom and dad just, you know, they didn't get the education, I guess, that they had hoped. So they, you know, their dream and goal was that for all five of the kids. And if my mom would have agreed on it, there would have probably been 10 or more kids. That's what my dad wanted, the whole team. You know, he wanted a basketball team and a football team, but she kind of said, that's it. But the five kids, we all are teachers and coaches, but our whole family, everybody, the cousins, the aunts, uncle, everybody lived there, and no one left Milwaukee. It's just, you were just, you know, that's what you were supposed to do. You know, you got your job, you got married, and I just kind of, I don't know why, I had a dream, a whim. I wanted to be a college coach. My brothers, David is in the Illinois High School Hall of Fame. Coach John Shire won the state tournament, Glenbrook North. Yep. And he was a college coach. My older brother, Ron, is in the Wisconsin High School Hall of Fame. And my dad ran playgrounds coaching. My sisters taught and coached. Everyone did teaching and coaching. And I did the first 2 years high school. My last 2 years of college and worked tons of camp. As Al knows, back then, camps were so important. And, you know, I worked 9-10 weeks at camp a summer. I mean, and this was Sunday to Saturday from, you know, all day. This was not the 3-hour day camps they have now. The little fluff things that they kind of call daycare, I think. But You know, but I mean, Thad Matta worked our camp at Purdue. I mean, this is, we had Rick Stansberry, we had Rodney Watson. I mean, we had all these guys working camp, and they were obviously young at that time. But so I worked all the camps, and I applied to everywhere to be a GA. I was so naive. I thought, you know, somebody would want me. And it just, you know, I probably did, I don't know, whatever at that time, 200 letters out. And I applied to all these grad, you know, for these to get into grad school. And it was just a freak thing. Bob Gottlieb, Doug Gottlieb's dad, was the coach of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. He was recruiting my brother. He knew Coach Katie. And, you know, I told him, he goes, what do you want to do? And I don't want to be a college coach. And it just happened. He hired Coach Katie's former GA. And he said, I know Gene needs a GA. This is in the middle of summer. And I was teaching fifth grade at that time and coaching high school. And he got me connected with Coach Katie. The old story, so a lot of people have heard, I drove 9 hours, got there. And not only was Coach Katie not in the office, he wasn't in town, he wasn't in the state, he wasn't in the country, he left. And so I drove, for me, 9 hours, that was like an eternity. At that time, I had never done that. And, you know, he's not there. I was just crushed. You know, here's my dream, my goal. And I went back. I was working camp. Actually, Rick Majerus, I was working a camp for Rick. And the next week, I put my coins in the payphone because we didn't have cell phones at that time. I called Coach Katie. And I said, Coach, you know, this is Bruce Weber. You know, I came down here. He goes, oh, I'm sorry. You know, I forgot about it. I didn't write it down or something. And I said, well, he goes, can you drive down again? I said, Coach, I drove 9 hours. I can't, you know, I don't think I can do that. I'm working camp. I took off last week. And I said, either you hire me or don't. It's August. I got to, you know, tell our school that I was going to teach at. And he got real quiet. And Al knows Coach Katie. If I would have known him at that time, I would have never said, you know, you got to hire me or not. I just probably would have hit me or something. But, you know, but he was so embarrassed that he, you know, that he'd missed it. He got real quiet. And all of a sudden he said, okay, you're hired. You know, he knew I was in grad school. He said, you got to be here in like 2 weeks. And that's, you know, so I never met him. And then, you know, the story goes on. The first day I get there, my sister gets killed in a car wreck. The night I was driving down there. So the next morning, she was about 13 months younger than me. She was kind of my twin. And, you know, it was devastating for me. And I broke out in hives. So I walk in the first time I meet Coach Katie. I said, Coach, I'm Bruce Weber. He's looking at me. I got hives on my face. And he said, what's wrong with you? And I said, Coach, I got some bad news, you know. And then it even more emotional my first time I meet him. And I had to leave right away. So I left. And then, you know, the story, Al knows, 19 years I was with him. And, it's just kind of everyone has a different pathway, different life. But that's how I got into college basketball. So very, very fortunate and had a blast. And I'm still afraid of Coach Katie. He's 87, but he's meant the world to me to give me the opportunity and all that I learned from him.
You got the opportunity to work with like another coach, and this was just primarily for camps for John Wooden. And then one of the things I saw too was that you would go on walks in the morning with him. You'd go on some long walks, talk with him, and just have conversation. And you even mentioned in one of your articles I was reading about that you would carry a notepad and a pen, and you'd write down some things that he would say. You gotta give us some information as to what some of that stuff was.
Well, if it goes back, the story is there's a coach named Tom Desitel who's in the Hall of Fame in Wisconsin. He got all of us started. He's got a basketball court named after him in Wisconsin, Sheboygan, Wisconsin. But Tom used to work Coach Wooden's camps. You know, he'd go out to, Al knows, you go out to California and they had all the camps. And there was a Medalist Industries was out of Milwaukee. And before Nike ran the clinics, Medalist Industries did this. This was Al McGuire, his group or whatever. I don't know exactly. But I would go and I took notes with Tom Desitel at all the clinics. And so, you know, I mean, I'm just, and I guess some of my whim, my dream, because I had been to these clinics and got a chance to, you know, I still have the original notebook. I think it was in 78 or something, Medalist Industries, all the clinic notes that I had put together, and they published it. So, but one of them was, you know, Coach Wooden was speaking in Louisville, and he knew Tom from working the camps, and you know, he just said, young fella, you get up early. And I don't really get up early. That's not my thing. But I said, yes. And he goes, well, I go for a walk every morning, 6 o'clock, and, you know, join me tomorrow. So I was out there 5:45 and got to walk and just listen. And then, you know, we were, you know, he's a Purdue grad. So we were at Purdue. We honored Coach Wooden several times, you know, and brought him back. And, you know, I was just in awe to, you know, to listen to him. It was the time he spoke, we had the biggest ballroom or whatever in West Lafayette when we brought him back. And you could hear a pin drop because everyone was so quiet. He was just magical. It's almost like going to church, to be honest. His words of wisdom and his stories and poems and, you know, and then later on, we played in the Wooden game, and, you know, he came down to me. We beat Gonzaga it was my good team at Illinois. We beat him, I don't know, 30 or more or something. And he told me it was some, you know, he said, Coach, I've watched a lot of teams, and this team is one of the best teams I've ever seen play. And which, you know, that's coming from Coach Wooden. So it was pretty cool. So, you know, and then D Brown was in the up for the Wooden Awards. I got to go out there again, hear him, and be around him. So just, you know, to have those opportunities. I told you, Rick Majerus being in the Big Ten, you know, scouting Bob Knight, Lute Olson, Judd Heathcote, you know, all those guys. It just, I was, you know, very, very fortunate.
No, I mean, you definitely had, you've worked with some great people. You've definitely taken away some great stuff. And I mean, it shows with your tremendous background, tremendous career that you had. And most recently with that career, you were with Kansas State. So if you could just like talk about some other things that really helped you that maybe you learned throughout the years, or I guess a couple things, if you have like one or two that really stand out to you that you learned throughout your journey that you really, or I should say that helped excel you at your Kansas State head coaching role.
Well, I think one of the things is, I was prepared, you know, I think that's the biggest thing. And, I, like a lot of young guys, you think, you know, everything, ahead of time, you know, and you, oh, I can be a head coach. And then Al, you know, and then what's the old saying, you move a foot over and all of a sudden you know, you don't remember anything. You don't know anything. So, I think, you know, I was also, because I got to be around Al McGuire, you know, just being in Milwaukee, I used to go to practices. Al McGuire practiced at 8 o'clock at night on Friday and Saturday. His whole goal was to keep the guys out of the bars as long as he could on the weekends. And they had open practices. So my dad would take us, you know, and I mean, I saw Al drive in on a motorcycle in the practice. I saw him with his entourages. I saw him getting a fist fight with a player. I mean, I saw a bunch of stuff. But Al McGuire always said, you know, he told me a couple times, you do your best coaching when you're an assistant. And you better have good people around you. And, you know, Coach Katie has said it. Al's heard him say it. You know, you're no better than the people around you. And I think that's one thing that you learn, you know, you got to have good people. And, you know, when I finally got that head coaching job at Southern Illinois, you know, obviously Al was part of that staff. You think Matt Painter, Rodney Watson, you know, Rodney had great success Division II and his longtime tenure at SIU, some of the best years of that, of all SIU basketball. And, you know, and then later, you know, added Chris Lowry to that staff, and a bunch of my players ended up being coaches. So, you know, it's so important to it. But I think the preparation, I get back to what I was saying, is that, you know, when you're young, you think you know everything. But, you know, we had a chance when we worked camps, you were coaching teams. And you were, you know, you're coaching against really good players. And even at camp then, there was no AAU when we started. And we had Scott Skiles was at the Purdue camp playing. Yeah. I'm just throwing out a name.
Sean Kemp.
Yeah. Sean Kemp. Yeah. Yes. I mean, Ed Horton, you know, you can just, these guys, if you remember, there were blue shirts. We brought those blue shirts in out.
Yeah.
The, you could have counselors for free. They could come to camp for free and they had to do a little work. They had to pick up the balls or something. But, you know, we tried to find young guys that were good. Antoine Walker was there 1 year, you know, just, so you're coaching these guys and you had to, and you're coaching against good coaches that ended up becoming college coaches. So you had that preparation. And then, you know, you, as an assistant with Coach Katy, the one thing he allowed you to do was to be involved. And I think that really helped. And, you know, it was one of my fears when I became a head coach, because I think Al would tell you my evolution with Coach Katy, I ended up doing a lot of stuff. Even as a GA, then there were no rules. And I'm so happy, and I fought for years now that they've gone back now to allow the GAs to be on the court. You know, the two extra staff people. How do you learn how to coach unless you coach? You know, it's just, and we could recruit at that time. I used to go out more than anybody because I was making $200 a month. If I could get per diem, you know, to eat food, I was so happy. Clem Haskins was one of the assistants at Western Kentucky, and he said, Bruce, go see this kid in Pippa Pass, Kentucky. It was like 6-hour drive, but I got mileage and per diem. I could actually turn the heat on that week. So
you got meals.
It just, you know, so that you got all those experiences. And then when I got to coach with Coach Katy, I was the third assistant at first. And, you know, there were only three at that time and then maybe a GA. And a lot of times the GAs were former players that were trying to finish or something. But I did travel plans. I did the scheduling. I did the tickets, you know, everything, all the other stuff, the study table. I'm making $4,000 or $400 a month or whatever, $4,000 for the year at that time. And I'm buying pizza. It's illegal. I did a violation. So the guys would sit at study hall and study so they wouldn't flunk out. So I'm spending my only money. But, you know, all those experiences. So when you became a head coach, I think it helped me because I had done all those, because all of a sudden they're thrown on your plate. And I remember when Matt Painter took over for me at SIU, Matt was, you know, he was calling, if not daily, every other day, Coach, what about this? What about that? Because he never thought about that. His whole thing, Al lived with them at once. You know, it was basketball and a little beer at night. So that was about it. That was it. He didn't want to mess with all that other stuff. So you had to learn. And I think that's why Matt's so smart. And that's why he's done so well. He's such a good, not only a good coach, but he's an efficient coach, and he, you know, he's organized, and that's so much, so important. Your efficiency is so important as a head coach. Your daily schedule, your, you know, not wasting time, because it's easy to go in the office. And, you know, we were joking before we got on here. Al said that he goes over to see Coach Mata and he just needs somebody to talk to. Well, you go in the office, well, you start talking about the NBA game on the last night. You start talking about the college game. You talk about, and now you didn't get any work done. And so I think that's so important. And then the efficiency, the organization and efficiency in practice is an utmost. And I go around, I've been, because of the TV thing with the Big Ten Network, and just, you know, friends have invited me in to watch practice. And I'm just, you know, some of the guys, I can tell they're not going to win, to be honest, because they're not efficient. They aren't prepared. And, you know, it just, you know, you wish they were around better people that helped them get to that point.
Yeah. No, I, this being a manager coach, I just remember in our practices, like Coach Katy, like everybody knew he was the boss, the whole gym knew it, but like, he gave all you guys a voice, whether it was, hey, you got this drill or this segment of practice or whatever it is. But like, and so you don't really realize that until you become a head coach, how much that helps you grow, because you can, and Thad did this with us in, you know, at Ohio State, like, you know, he'd give you an area or a segment of practice And what you got to do is over the course of 1 year, 2 years, multiple years, like you're developing your own coaching voice,
yes,
which helps you later as a head coach, because now the things that you're coaching or teaching in those segments, you have to do it with conviction. You got to be prepared, and you're still doing what he wants, but you're just doing it your way, and he's still getting what he wants.
Yes.
And so I just remember all you guys having a voice in practice. And that's probably one of the greatest gifts Thad gave us, is just the ability to teach and coach. Because, you know, I always like to say, like, I used to tell my assistants at Charlotte, like, hey, practice isn't just for players. Like, yes, you guys need practice coaching every day.
Yes.
Like, so that they you know, they need practice to play. Yeah. But you guys need practice coaching and developing your own voice and your own confidence and your own delivery and all those things.
Yes. And that organizational part, it's so important now. And Coach Katie used to say, and again, you see, if you know Coach Katie, if you've been around him, you see this mean, tough dude, you know, that people you were afraid of and throwing his coat or whatever, you know, just, but he, a couple things. When you ask why do you have, one, he told me a long time ago, this is probably 40 years ago, if you want to stay in the business, you have to be willing to change. You have to be flexible. And you know, I, one time at Southern Illinois, I left him and he called me and he said he had a question for me. And I said, Coach, you have a question for me? I'm so
right. This is backwards.
And, that's right. And he said, do parents, are they starting to call you? And I was like, you know, because before that old model, the parents, the only time you saw them is if their son got in trouble or daughter or whatever, you know, you, and he said, I got parents that are starting to call me and question my, you know, playing time and stuff. I said, he goes, do anyone call you? I said, yeah, Coach, I try to stay in touch with my parents. And he goes, how do they have the confidence to call me? You know, it's but he changed, he learned, you know, the hairstyles, whatever it might be, he's able to adapt with it. And recruiting, obviously, I've seen all the evolution from the 3-point line to the shot clock to, you know, all the, you know, he keeps calling me, Al, you'll laugh this. He goes, you know, everyone's doing booty ball now. And he goes, he'll call and say, why don't they call 5 seconds on? The guy's closely guarded. And I said, Coach, they took the rule out. He goes, why the hell did they do that? He goes, you can't guard anybody. And, you know,
all right, backing guys down, booty ball.
Yeah, so it just, you know, it's funny. But he, you know, and that's why he stayed in the business. But the other part, too, he always said, you know, we had at that time, you know, 4 staff members, 5 staff members, you know, 10 eyes were better than 2. If, you know, what you were talking about, Al, 5 voices are better. And you know, the practices were a little chaotic at times. But to me, the games are chaotic, right? And you know, so if the guys can't deal with practice, you know, when Conco Martin was a freshman, you can ask him, he was so mad at me as I was, assistant coach. And one time in the middle of the game, he ran down the court and told Coach Katie, tell Coach Weber to leave me alone. And the game's going on. But it's, you know, I was probably telling him to, you know, get off to the ball on defense or something, but he just couldn't deal with it. He was, you know, a young player. And so it just, I think all that. And again, everyone has different styles. Al, you've been around it. Other guys don't let the assistant coaches talk. They don't even get on the court. And
yeah.
You know, I don't think, and I'll be honest, those are the guys where their coaches get out in the world and get their own jobs. And guess what? They're not successful.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, just unprepared.
They didn't get a chance. They didn't get, like you said, Al, to learn your voice and you know, learn how to present things and doing a clinic. I'll tell you little things, like Alvin Brooks was my assistant at K-State, and he's with Scott Drew now, and obviously his dad. And I always let the assistant coaches do the radio, like a scouting report. And Al came up to me after a couple of weeks that we started the season. He goes, I just wanted to thank you. And I said, for what? He goes, I've never done a radio. He goes, this is so cool, Coach, to have that opportunity and be prepared You know, because if you're going to be a head coach, you got to do radio. But if you never did it, how are you prepared? So, you know, all those little things, I think it's so important to be part of that.
Yeah, no doubt.
And one of the big things you said, too, was how you always have to change, you know, especially on a day-to-day basis, or I should say more of a year-to-year basis, even the game changes. And one of the things that we noticed, and me and Al were kind of talking about, is I know you started out your head coaching career as more of like offensively as a motion type of coach. You know, you ran a lot more motion. But then you ultimately kind of changed and adapted throughout the years, and you started progressing more into like ball screens. Can you talk about like that progression and maybe – you know, how you went about that and just kind of the thoughts behind going through that?
Well, I kind of laugh about this when I tell the story that Coach Knight was the one way back that said ball screens were no good. And I think he was so smart that he didn't want to guard it. So he just told me that the
put it out there. Good, so
no one did ball screens. Right. And then Patino goes to the NBA, you know, help. You had the evolution of motion when we didn't have shot clock way back. Coach Katie had solid gold. We'd pass it 60 times on a possession.
Yeah. Well, that was they had the game in practice called 60-point game.
Yes.
Right?
Yes. Yeah. How many passes without the dribble that you could, you know, get? And we could only shoot layups. So it's just, but with the shot clock, you can't run. You don't have the time to run motion. You know, you can have motion concepts. I always say it, quick hitters and then motion concepts into ball screens. I think any type of movement into ball screens is hard to guard. And when I watch either as a TV analyst or just as a fan, you know, the teams that just come down in ball screens, when, you know, if teams have good ball screen defense, they're going to stop them. But if you get movement into it, it helps. And you know, I even go back to Larry Brown. You know, he ran motion in the NBA a little bit, but, you know, it was quick hitting motion cuts. And then you had to go into your ball screens at the end. So you had the change, and that was part of it, you know, and we still, and again, I think the hardest thing to guard is motion. And, you know, and cause it's, what is it? It's organized freelance, teaching the players how to play. Coach Knight's old thing at the clinic, would you rather have two good plays at the end of the season or two good players? And if you have two good players at the end of the season, they're going to make plays for you and they're going to help you win in March.
Yeah. Doug, you don't know this, but Illinois, and I don't mean to pick at the scab here, Coach, but I have to. Illinois was number one in the country back in the 2004 season. 04-05 and
not only number one, undefeated, Al.
undefeated team. And Doug, that we played, this is at Ohio State, so we play Illinois at the start of the year, first game of the season, the Big Ten season, and I think that team right now is still scoring on us. That's how it felt like that night. Like, and Doug, he had three players on the perimeter, D. Brown, Luther Head, and you remember Darren Williams. Probably Doug, mm-hmm. probably the most yep. notable of those three guys.
Yeah.
And they were this team of like NBA, obviously three, I'd say legit, you know, Roger was kind of a fringe NBA guy and James, but like their three perimeter guys were so fast and they raced the ball up the floor so fast. And there was absolutely zero hitches between the break ending and their motion beginning. So imagine three really fast, talented guys all pushing the ball, running down the floor, and then your bigs are immediately screening these guys right away. And they're getting to their motion like that. Like, and that's how, like, our guys didn't know which way to turn their heads at the in that game. Like, it was unreal. And so I'll tell you this now, Coach, and I probably almost got fired. But we were at Thad's house talking about the game. When you guys came back to Columbus, it was on a Sunday.
Yes.
1 o'clock, CBS, Gus Johnson calling the game, still remember. And we were at Thad's house on a Friday before going to practice to talk about, like, how to beat you guys. And to the point where, like, a couple of our other assistants were like, yeah, you know, let's just hang in there and compete. And, you know, they're really good. And I got pissed. And I said, well, hell with it. Like, let's just go back to practice and tell the guys, let's hope for our best. you know. And my point was, like, if we don't have any belief that we can beat these guys, we're going to get – and our players are going to sniff it out today and tomorrow, and they're going to walk in there Sunday with their tails between their legs, and yeah, we're going to lose by 50 on national television. So what we did, though, to try to guard you guys is we just really tried to say, if you're guarding a cutter, that you have to try to do your best to stay on his hip. Unless the screens were either high and wide, then you could show trail and shoot the gap. Or if they're low and deep, meaning like at the block level or below, you could show trail and shoot the gap because there's really nowhere to fade if the deeper the screen gets, yes, to the baseline. So you could shoot the gap on those. Or if it's like a wide or high pin down, you could show trail, shoot the gap. We told the guys, if you're guarding a screener, you have to identify the type of screen that's being set before it's set, so the guys guarding the cutters know how to navigate it. And then we told the guy on the ball, because he was usually the one distributing, just be ready to jump and swipe and take away curls and chase dribbles and things like that. And then if you're guarding a screener, be able to be even with the screen. So now when the ball's in the air, you can kind of stunt and show and hedge while the ball's in the air, then get back to your guy. And that was the guys were on our side that day. You know, Matt Sylvester makes a shot and the rest is history. But like, it's like, you can't even imagine that game plan right now. Right. Yeah. Because you'd be talking about, all right, what pick and roll coverage we in.
Yeah.
You know, who's tagging, you know, who's Xing out on the weak side if they skip it, like all this. Like, so it's just amazing how the game has evolved, because that's two totally different game plans that we're talking about. But again, that was 2004. And Doug, I don't know if you know this, that team made it to the national championship game, lost to Carolina. And that was their, you know, we were their first loss of the year. That was their second loss of the year, but it one of the best college teams ever, in my opinion, that I've ever seen.
Yeah. We were actually that year shot, Matt hits the shot, Sylvester. I think we led almost the whole game, 39 minutes and 50 seconds or so. Yeah. I don't know. And then yeah, we had two shots to beat Carolina and we didn't get them in. And so we always say we were three shots from perfection. And 37 wins at that time was the most wins in the history of the NCAA. Cool. I think somebody has 38 now, but they, and it took some time to get those guys. But once we got them believing in how to play, and all five of them, the jump ball, the Carolina game, all 10 guys, I have the picture, all 10 guys played in the NBA. And, you know, again, were they recruited NBA players? You know, Dee Brown probably had the most publicity, but the other guys, even Darren wasn't even the best player on his high school team. So Bracy Wright was, if you remember. So it's just, yeah, and we had, you know, so it you know, you hopefully you teach them how to play. And when I said two good players, we had five good players who knew how to play. And you know, they were good at what they did. And you know, it was fun. It was special. So
it's good when you got the good X's and O's, but when you throw the good players in there, especially NBA caliber really guys, it makes a little,
yeah, there's
no doubt. Like a little bit easier.
I was going to say what Matt Painter has done, and I always said Matt's one of the better offensive guys I've ever been around. Kevin Stallings was brilliant offensively, and but Matt is taking some motion things, and he kind of even football stuff. He gets things, misdirection stuff, and then he's going back into Edie. You know, he's getting movement into ball screens, and you never know. You some games you watch the next couple days, they just come and do the middle ball screen, and, you know, and then a side ball screen. And it's just, and if you're good in ball screen defense, you know, you're going to lose to those guys. You know, you're going to beat those teams. But if you make a move a little bit, it always helps.
I have one final question, too, before we kind of moved on to the final segment, unless Al had something, was, as a coach with a tremendous career and everything, is there anything that maybe, especially, and I'm asking this in regards to, of course, rising coaches and working with young coaches, is there anything you would have potentially done differently? Anything you're like, this maybe would have helped, or something maybe advice-wise, is there anything that you would say that potentially you could have done differently as a young coach? Looking back,
I think the one thing I love my journey. Everyone has a different journey. I think that's the one thing people got to realize. You know, I get so many calls, you know, how can I get into college? How can, you know, how do I move up? And former players, you know, assistant coaches. And, you know, I just, you, everyone has their own journey and you just got to enjoy every moment of it. And, you know, it's so special. And when it's gone, it's so hard. I mean, it's addicting. I talked to all these guys, like, you know, it's so exhausting. And, you know, you work, I always said I work 340 days a year and probably, you know, 14, 16 hours a day, you know, that's just how you did it. You know, it's just kind of part of it. And, you know, so you, when it's gone, it's like, oh my goodness, you know, it's just, it's so hard. And that's why coaches stay in it so long. And, you know, the money's so different. But again, I was making $200 a month, $400 a month. You know, even my first full-time at Purdue, it was $17,000 for the year. You know, it's like, so it wasn't like, you know, Al, your first thing at SIU. I mean, you and Matt had the, Painter had to live together because you guys didn't make enough money to have your own place.
And no, it was,
you're on the futon on the floor in the bay and the low.
$35,000. 35 grand full-time assistants. I remember.
Yeah, it's just, that's right. You know, so it was, you know, that's the thing I think with young coaches. One, you got to sacrifice, you know, you're going to have to, you know, if you're going to get into it, and you better do it for the right reasons. You got to love it. You got to, you know, I always said, if it's not about the players, you're, you know, you shouldn't be in the game. You know, for me, I guess the one thing I didn't do, and, you know, I didn't network as much as I should, and probably that's why I stayed as an assistant. But I would, Coach Katie had me doing so much stuff, I didn't have time to network. You know, it's like, where's the bus? You know, and it's like, I'm doing the buses, and I've been there 18 years. And you know, so it's just, he didn't trust anyone else. You know, so
that's right.
And I was scouting too. We could scout in person at that time. That's the other thing. Guys don't even realize, you know, we used to go see every team in person. So it just, but that networking and, you know, now the agents, you probably got to have an agent. You know, I didn't have an agent my whole time. You know, it just, it's kind of sad, but that's just how the business is. And you got to have, you know, probably have an agent to. But I think more than anything, my advice to any young guy, that, you know, be prepared. If you get a chance, you better be prepared because you may never get another chance.
Yeah, for sure. It's funny, Coach, like you mentioned camps, and that was back then, that was the networking time.
Yes.
You know, and because now, you know, the travel stuff is kind of, you know, supplemented camps. I mean, there's still guys that do camps, but that whole camp culture was a whole different deal altogether in terms of just meeting guys and, you know, exchanging phone numbers on a napkin. You know, when you go out at night, you know, during the third or fourth night of camp, everyone goes out drinking and guys are exchanging information, you know, because the next day is the last day and you're trying to, you know, you got phone numbers on your clipboard of dudes you want to stay in touch with, no emails. You know, it was just like numbers and, you know, you.
And you weren't texting because there were no cell phones. Still a little later.
But that camp time was like a really rich networking time. And so that's one thing we always try to talk about in Rising Coaches is that guys, you know, if you're reserved or quiet or whatever, you know, you always tell our players, hey, you know, you got to bring what the game requires.
Yes.
And so, you know, if you're kind of a shy, reserved, or quiet guy, you got to find a way to step out of that and bring what the profession requires and what potential advancement may require. So I'm so glad you said that because, it totally lines up with what we try to share out here all the time.
Yeah.
And then what we'll do is, since obviously we want to be aware of your time and kind of we'll hop into the final segment, the three quick hitters, three questions. And then after that, we'll wrap it up with our final question and we'll be on our way. So the three quick hitters, first one, what we have is you mentioned, and this is kind of going back to what you said before, you said having good people around you is a necessity as a head coach, especially as assistants. So what was one of, like, if there had to be one skill or characteristic about a coach when you're looking to hire somebody, what would that skill be?
I think one of the things Al just talked about, their ability to communicate. And you know, I think that's so important that, because it's now, it's, you know, it, you still, you got, I think one of the things I tell young coaches, don't be afraid to coach. You got to coach them. I know NIL, all this stuff. But if you don't coach them, you're not going to keep your job anyway. So, but if you do, you got to, you know, if somebody gets mad at a player in practice or whatever, it happens all the time. I always tell them before I leave the office, make sure you text them or call them tonight and tell them why you were mad. You know, so I think it's so important that communication. Well, you know, and Coach Katie taught me that years ago. Alan might remember Ryan Burning. I got mad at him when he was young and I didn't talk to him for 3-4 weeks. And Coach called me in and said, I know you're mad at Ryan. And he said, I have one question for you. He said, who's the adult and who's the kid? And, you know, it just, and he said, and I guess, well, I guess I'm the adult and he's the kid. He goes, yeah, well, act like an adult and go talk to him. So it's just, you know, and then we, you know, and he didn't do anything evil or bad. I was just, you know, mad at him because he probably didn't jump to the ball enough or something. I don't know, but it's so, but I think that communication is so, so important, you know, the guy, and then just love of the game. I want guys that love the game and want to coach the game. I didn't want just a recruiter. I didn't want, you know, just, I want guys that love it.
Yeah. No, the beauty of that is the guys that love it usually know where the priorities belong, right? Like, yeah. Guys that love the game know that players are first and foremost all day, every day. And usually the guys that love it aren't going to get caught up in, you know, how fast can I get to this next deal? I mean, they're just going to throw themselves in to what's going on. And hey, yes. if we win, then they come looking for everybody, you know?
Yeah.
So, that's good stuff.
Yeah.
And then the second one we have would be, what part of the game do you find yourself most like studying most? So is it like offensive, defensive schemes, tendencies? That could be when you were a coach or even now, since you still work very heavily with basketball.
Yeah, some of it kind of depended on my role, you know, what role I was at with the staff as a head coach and my staff around me. I end up with, you know, Chris Lowry at different times, and he's a defensive guy. So, you know, if it was up to him, we would do, out of a 2.5-hour practice, 2 hours 15 on defense, 15 minutes on offense. So then I would have to go the other way and be more offensively, you know, minded and make sure I'm involved with that. And so it depended. One thing, defense gives you a chance. It travels. It gives you a chance on the road. I mean, I love defense. I get, you know, you got to try to guard some guys sooner or later. If you want to win in the tournament, you got to guard somebody. Because someday the shots aren't going in, you know, it's just, so, you know, I guess that was my background with Coach Katie, and he'll tell you, he came up high school JUCO. He was offensive minded coach, wanted to score 95, 100. And then he got with Eddie Sutton and he said, I learned about winning basketball and how to win in the tournament. He said, I could never win a national championship at Hutch because we didn't stop somebody. So I think that, but I love offense, you know, Coach Knight, I always said he won early with defense and then he got bored with it. So he decided to be a genius on offense and, you know, created his stuff there. So, you know, I'm not quite at that level, but I do like offense and how it works. And, you know, so a little bit of both, I guess.
Okay. And then this one we kind of touched on already. I thought about changing it, but we'll still mention it. And is there one moment in your whole career that still haunts you to this day that you still lay down, you think about? And if so, like, I guess it would be, how could you have changed that outcome?
You know, the games that when I was with Coach Katie and just getting him to the Final Four, and we lost to Duke, you know, to go to the Final Four, but Glenn Robinson got hurt, and, you know, it just, you know, I don't know how you could change it. Glenn, you know, he just hurt his back. And I've heard lots of different reasons why he hurt his back. A lot of rumors through the years, but and we had another year with Brian Cardinal, Brad Miller, Jerron Cornell was a kid that he was leading the Big Ten in scoring, and he got a high ankle sprain. And I thought that year maybe we could. Troy Lewis's group, we lose to K-State. In Detroit, we beat K-State by 20-some points in Mackey Arena in December. And then we play them in Detroit, and this is Mitch Richmond. We couldn't get our players' attention, but we would have had to play Danny Manning. So I'm not sure we would have won after that. But, I don't know that, those are the moments that just sitting there, I remember Knoxville, Tennessee, that we lose to Duke and, Glenn and coach don't get to go to the Final Four, and then I got to go, and that's always kind of, I've always felt a little bit, sad that, I got to go and coach didn't get to go.
And then the final question we have to kind of tie it all up, what is your best piece of advice for young rising coaches? I know we did touch on this a little bit, but this is the big question, the best piece of advice for young rising coaches trying to get their foot in the door, and then how can they accomplish that?
Yeah, I think one, everyone has a different journey. Like I talked about. Two, be prepared when you do get your opportunity, be prepared. And then three, enjoy where you're at. Now, I just kind of talked a little bit about it. Don't be thinking about your next step. Make sure if you win, I always tell, who makes all conference? The guys from the winning team. They make all conference. Look at it. The first and second place teams in the Big Ten, two players from Purdue, two players from Illinois were on first team. So it's if you win, our 05 team, all five players played in the NBA a little bit. Darren Williams was the third draft pick in the NBA that year and played, Olympics, All-Star, everything. How many points do you think – where was Darren Williams on our team scoring-wise? What do you think?
Was he third?
Fourth.
Yeah.
Fourth. So, and wow. He was the third pick in the draft. We just kept saying, if you win, you're going to get the exposure. You're going to, get the opportunities. And it's the same thing with coaches. Al, you brought it up. If you win, you're going to get opportunities. And make sure if you're a young guy and your boss gives you a chance, you better be there for him, helping him win. Because if he wins, you're going to win. And then you're going to have your opportunities down the road.
Man.
Gold.
Yep.
Gold.
We talk about that all the time. I didn't tell you this, Coach, but like when Doug and I jumped on with this Rising Coaches deal, we didn't, it can be a misnomer if you think about Rising Coaches. And we told the CEO, like, we're not bringing people on to say this person's rising and this guy, we're not trying to be a rating system. And we're not doing that. Our whole thing is Rising Coaches means let's rise the profession.
Yeah,
let's make the game better. Regardless the levels that we have on here is range from youth to NBA, men's side, women's side, doesn't matter. Like, it was already a great platform before we were a part of it, and we just want to make it better. And the best way we can do that is bring people on that are going to help the profession grow. And so, thank you so much for doing this. Like, it's great to see you again. Number one, I haven't seen you in person in a long time. So if you happen to go to Phoenix or whatever at the Final Four, we'll be out there doing some live pods and stuff. So hopefully you can catch up in person. But just thank you for being not just a great friend, but a mentor. This goes back now. I mean, this is late 80s, early 90s. when I'm running around as a manager at Purdue, I go from walk-on tryouts. We have 11 guys have walk-on tryouts, and you guys kill us at 6 a.m. because they did it at 6 a.m. to keep all the guys that want to go out and drink. They figured they're not going to wake up in the morning. So,
right.
I end up getting cut, and my high school coach had told me, if you get cut, you got to leave your pride in the dorm and walk back and ask those guys if there's anything you can do. And he used this phrase, to be in the belly of the beast of the program every day. And so I went, you called the next day with the thanks, but no thanks. Thanks for trying out, and you guys took one guy that year, Marvin Ray, God rest his soul. Marvin was the only walk on you took. And so I literally walk back over and I see Coach Stallings and I ask him about being a manager. And I'd sweated out the night before the walk-on tryouts. I was sweating. I had my shoes by the bed. I woke up at like 5. I didn't want to be late. So I sweat out the night before the walk-on tryout. I go back to see Coach Stahl and ask about being a manager. He says, come back the next day, see our senior manager, Ed Howitt. So now I walk back to my dorm. I sweat out the next night of figuring out, am I going to be a manager or not? Yeah. Like, because if this doesn't happen, like, I don't know what the hell I'm going to do.
Yeah.
And so I go back the next day. I meet with Ed and you guys. There was one manager spot left. I took it, and that's that. So if I've never said it before, thank you. Because I had no idea what that was going to lead to, but man,
yeah, just think about it, hanging out Matt Painter, and now he's a superstar, and
yeah, exactly. And I know where all his bodies are buried, so I can make some money. If I want to bribe some people, I can get some serious loot.
My daughter's member at SIU, they kept putting chicken tenders in his pockets and calling him Chicken Boy.
But Coach, we know you got to run. This has been awesome.
Yeah, man. No, it's thank great to so see much. You. And I would say one last thing. One, Division I coaching, it's unbelievable. But there's a lot of great coaches in high school, Division III, Division II, junior college. And, you know, whatever your journey is, whatever your path, enjoy it. Make the most of it. It's so special. And, you know, Al, there's some of the best coaches are high school coaches. Some of the best coaches are Division twos and threes. And there's nothing wrong with that. You know, everyone has a different journey. You know, bring the most of the game, enjoy the game, and promote the game. I think that's the most important thing. So thank you, guys.
Yes, sir. Thank you. And that was, again, former NCAA head coach and current Big Ten analyst, Coach Weber. Thank you very much for everything. And that does it for another episode of the Rising Coaches podcast. Again, you got Doug and Alan. Keep working. Keep rising, coaches. Take care.
Prepare your team for success this season with our friends at Dr. Dish Basketball, the official number one selling shooting machine in basketball. If you're looking to transform and focus your team's training efforts, all you have to do is mention Rising Coaches or tell them we sent you with the Rising Coaches podcast for an additional $300 off select Dr. Dish shooting machines. I want to thank all our listeners for tuning in with us this episode. If you are not a member, want more content, or even be a potential member on our member spotlight to have your story heard, go visit risingcoaches.com. Follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and X at Rising Coaches. And don't forget to subscribe, leave a rating, and review so we can continue to keep rising together.